First then, here is Lori Mercier to talk with Marion Schlotterbeck about the other 9/11. Lori.
Thanks, Clayton. Marion Schlotterbeck is an assistant professor of history at University of California, Davis, and a former researcher for the Chile Documentation Project at the National Security Archive, which is a great online resource featuring thousands of documents concerning often secret interventions of the United States in Latin America and the rest of the world. She is also the author of the forthcoming book, Beyond the Vanguard, Everyday Revolutionaries in Allende's Chile, and is here to talk about the legacies of the Movement of the Revolutionary Left, or MIR, MIR, both before and after the September 11, 1973 military coup that overthrew the democratically elected government of Salvador Allende. Welcome to KABU, Marion Schlotterbeck.
Thank you.
Before we talk about the legacies and memories of MIR activism before and after the 73 military coup in Chile, tell us why Salvador Allende's and his Popular Unity's electoral victory in 1970 was such a seminal moment for other radical political projects across the hemisphere.
Salvador Allende promised a democratic, peaceful path to socialism. This was going to be a revolution through the ballot box of the Cold War. What Chile offered the world, and particularly the progressive radical imaginaries, was an alternative model, both to Soviet-style communism and to U.S. liberal capitalist democracy.
Marion?
Yes.
Okay, I think we're cut off there. Not such a great connection with your phone. So Allende's successes in land reform and nationalizing industries galvanized his right-wing opponents, including the Nixon administration in the United States. How did Pinochet's 1973 coup, which along with authoritarian rule instituted neoliberal policies that dramatically ended Allende's reforms, also wipe out memories of the successes of the Popular Unity and MIR projects?
I think so often we say that the victors are the ones who get to write history, or they get to write the first version of it. And really, when the Chilean military junta came to power in 1973, they justified their actions as salvation for the country from the Marxist chaos that Allende had brought Chile to. With time, as the regime pivoted to implement neoliberal austerity measures, it started to become a kind of ends justify the means, that the economic benefits of the so-called Chilean miracle under Pinochet outweighed the human cost of political repression. And I think part of the reason why it became so hard to challenge that narrative is that so many of the neoliberal policies implemented under the dictatorship really remained in place after the 1990 democratic transition.
Hello, Marion?
Yes.
Okay. There were also assassination campaigns, deliberate efforts to eliminate the left in Chile as well. Did that contribute to this wiping out of collective memories of the successes prior to the coup?
Absolutely. The scale of human rights violations under the Pinochet regime is astounding. Nearly 3,000 Chilean citizens were detained or disappeared and summarily executed by the regime. And I think one aspect of repression in Chile that is a little unique is that 40,000 Chileans, again, a much larger number than those who died at the hands of the military, actually survived the clandestine torture centers. And so really the scale of repression generated a widespread culture of fear that really inhibited being able to talk about what had come before 1973.
Now, what was the Plan Z that managed to also survive in collective memory?
Sure. Plan Z was a sort of propaganda fabrication that started to circulate in the month before the September 11th, 1973 coup. And Plan Z claimed that there was going to be the sort of auto coup on the left, that they published the names of several thousand non-Marxist Chileans who were supposedly going to be murdered in their beds at night, entire families, members of the business elites. And this sort of created a little bit of panic, but I think what was interesting was that at the time, everybody knew this was fake news. Nobody really believed it. as the dictatorship consolidated its hold on power through tremendous levels of repression, a lot of ordinary Chileans started to believe Plan Z. They needed a narrative that would make sense of the unimaginable brutality that was happening around them.
Well, since the end of the coup in 1990, what have been the ways in which people, and including yourself, have been trying to rescue the memories of the promises of mere activism and strategies of Allende's Popular Unity Project?
I think part of what we're seeing right now is a general kind of revisiting of the 1960s and revisiting of the leftist radical projects in the 1960s to try to understand what other legacies come out of these movements. The left sometimes is so good at telling only the narratives of its own defeat, right? And so it's unquestionable that Allende's Democratic Project for Socialism was defeated by the Chilean military with the backing of the U.S. government. But I wanted to know, what was it that really remained? What were the aspects of that experience that stayed with people? And I think through sort of what my book, Beyond the Vanguard, is looking at is the ways in which people are transformed by engaging in movement politics. These processes of grassroots empowerment and collective action and social struggle really endure in people's memories and remain a kind of touchstone that guides how they live their lives, in spite of the defeat of the political project, in spite of everything that comes after.
So could you give us an example of that kind of transformation that took place and continues to survive?
Sure. I think a lot of what we see when we revisit the 1960s are examples of really successful coalitional grassroots movements, and those strategies for organizing still have a lot of relevance today. I think when we think about the 60s, we think everything was about class struggle and Marxism, but under the auspices of these leftist movements, we see a lot of the sort of seeds of the kind of horizontal participatory democratic practices that have come to define a lot of the new social movements and that we're seeing a resurgence of today, particularly starting around 2010, 2011, with Occupy Wall Street, with the Chilean student movement of 2011.
And what were the goals of that student movement of 2011?
Well, the movement happened in a particular moment in time. In 2010, Chileans elected Sebastián Piñera, a billionaire, outsider politician, from the Conservative Party. This is the first time the right came back into power in Chile since the dictatorship had ended. He was a politician that was a lot more concerned with polling than with policy, and I think in a lot of ways he's a figure who resonates with the sitting American president today. And so the fact that the right was back in power generated this opening for general social discontent that had been percolating for decades to manifest itself. And so we saw a series of different social movements, from LGBT rights to environmental rights. And then in June, college and high school students launched a movement to demand free, quality education. And in a moment of such sort of advanced state of capitalism, and a moment in which neoliberalism really seemed hegemonic, that demand for education as a right, not a consumer good, really seemed like a revolutionary act.
Yeah, and in addition to this kind of lasting legacy of that grassroots activism that Mir had practiced in the 1960s, what are some the ways in which people have been reflecting about the lost opportunities to create a democratic revolution?
I mean, I think part of what is so clear in the tragedy of the 1973 coup in Chile is that it really marked sort of end of this period of progressive democratization of Chilean society, right? The Chilean political system broke down, and it broke down in this moment in which more and more people had a stake in it, in which more and more people were participating. And so in really fundamental ways, I think this question of the extent to which political party politics are democratized so that the base actually has a say and isn't always just following whatever the leaders the party puts forward wants, the ways in which there are real mechanisms for citizens to have their demands heard, to feel like their voices matter, not just every 4 years when they go to vote in elections.
And it's comforting to know that that kind of grassroots activism is alive and well in Chile today, despite that the decades of repression under the dictatorship. And thanks so much, Marian Schlatterbeck, for joining us today on the Old Mole Variety Hour and remembering the significance of Salvador Allende's popular unity government and the coup of September 11th, 1973. Marian Schlatterbeck is author of Beyond the Vanguard, Everyday Revolutionaries in Allende's Chile.
Thank you. Allende vive Chile.
Gracias a Dios.
El pueblo unido jamás será vencido.
El pueblo unido jamás será vencido. El pueblo unido jamás será vencido. El pueblo unido jamás será vencido. De pie cantar que vamos a triunfar. Avanzan ya banderas de unidad y tú vendrás marchando.
And that's the great Chilean group Inti Illimani. They were lucky to be in Rome at the time of the coup and were not able to return until the end of the Pinochet regime.